Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And this is Sell or Die, real-world sales talk, no bullshit, no tricks.
We're interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development, all to help you become a better salesperson.
We're taking your sales questions live. Send them to us on Twitter, Facebook, or email them to us at sellordie@gittimer.com.
And reading every single one of your questions, the man behind the glass, the one, the only, Groucho our producer, the great Doug Branson.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, hi, Jennifer. A reminder to our listeners, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Get these episodes every week right when they come out. Just search Sell or Die. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
Well, right now we're in separate sales worlds.
That is true.
I had a call from a customer who was looking to have a seminar done, and they were expecting a salesperson to call them. And I called them back myself, and they were totally blown away and hired me within 5 minutes. Which just goes to show, if you pick up your own damn phone, you can make a sales. You can make a sale. And Jenny is in New York City, far away.
Yeah. Tomorrow, I'm launching a new networking group that meets on Thursdays in New York, and it's all salespeople who, as a result of the group, are going to be making a hell of a lot more sales. So I'm real excited about it.
And coming up, we have an amazing show. Branding expert Julie Broad joins us live to help you create a brand if you don't have one, or energize your existing brand if you do.
Plus, we help some salespeople in career flux, a segment we're calling Stay or Resume.
I thought you were going to call it Flux You. Just a joke.
I'm excited about this new segment. It's going to rock.
Cool. So let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. All right, first things first, let's answer some questions that you have this week, because you are the most important person in the world, other than me and, of course, Jen. But as our customer, as our listener, we have a bunch of stuff on sales and personal development. Doug, who is first?
First up, we have Mike. Mike writes, I sell tickets.
Wait, Mike? It's not like some weirdo name on Reddit?
No, no, we didn't get this one from Reddit. This one came to the email, sellordie@gittimer.com.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, so Mike asks, he writes, I sell tickets in sporting events, and I'm struggling to create urgency when there is a lot of time before a particular sport I'm selling. It's football season, and no one is thinking about January basketball or hockey. How do I drive some urgency into the equation when the target is far off?
Let me handle this, because I coach a lot of sales teams that are professional sports teams. And the only way that you can actually create urgency is to bring the person to an emotional state of mind, talking about ball games that they went to with their dad or their mom, and trying to help them consider the importance of going to a sporting event, either with a customer or a family member or a child or a best friend, and then creating a sense of urgency by saying, these are the best seats that we have, and I want to make sure you get them before they're gone. Two senses of urgencies.
I'm not really a sports person, but aren't there specific teams people like or specific players people like? If it were me selling those things, I'd find out who their favorite team is. And if it's not the team that they're selling tickets for, get it so that, it's the team that's going to be visiting. If it's a favorite player, let's make sure you're going to be at that game. There's just always, it's all about emotion. I agree with you, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Jen. I should tell you that there's also teams that are popular, teams that people want to see. So, for example, the San Francisco Warriors, or the Bay Area Warriors, what do they call them? The Golden Gate
Golden,
Warriors.
Golden State Warriors.
Golden State Warriors, yeah. They used to be
I think they're just the Steph Curry Warriors.
They are the Steph Curry. Well, now they're the Kevin Durant Warriors as well. And some people would argue that the other players on the team can step up the bat just as well. But everyone would want to see them. They're the world champion. They're almost a world champion. They're the former world champion bowing down to Cleveland. So people would want to see LeBron and people would want to see Steph Curry. So they want to see certain players, not necessarily certain teams. So, yeah, I would sell what they have top of mind most, and I would find out where the person grew up. And I'd talk about that city as their hometown.
And that'll help bridge some of that time gap then. Excellent.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, here's another one from reddit.com/r/.
Now let's hear that weird name, Doug.
This is a good one. Username Bitextual.
Oh, my God.
Bitextual writes, I'm new to sales and in retail sales. The area where I'm weakest is the extended warranty sale. I feel like it's hard enough to sell it, but twice as hard when it's a husband-wife scenario. I'll pitch it to one, but then time to pay and the other one shows up, typically the husband, and they see the price and they say, no. Even when they are pitched together, there is a, well, what do you think, honey, moment where it breaks down. It seems like they are ready to just pay and then I run out of time. What should I do with the husband-wife scenario?
The most interesting thing to me is that the warranty thing is sold on its own. When in fact, if there's a $200 warranty and a $600 television, you should just sell them both at the same time. The price is $800 and that includes the warranty. And that way...
Yeah, but if you're in a store where that's out of your control, like at Best Buy, for example... You know,
you don't want to mention any names, but yeah, Best Buy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, there's nothing bad about this, but no. I mean, it just may not be the way you or I would approach it. But you go to get a TV and then you go to the register, and at the register is when they begin to have that conversation. And that's just their process. It's not like it's a $800 TV. But really, it's a $900 TV because it includes the warranty.
Yeah, and the warranty is usually more money than it's worth. But the bottom line is, it's you're paying for the insurance. You're paying for the gamble that something might go wrong and that it'll be covered. And it's worth it if your machine breaks down, you know, then all of a sudden your warranty becomes worth it. And if it doesn't, you've gambled away $150, which you would have easily done in Vegas on the first night. So my recommendation to the salesperson is recommend the warranty. Don't ask people if they want it. Mr. Jones, most people take the warranty, and that's so that if something happens during that period of time, you're covered.
Yeah, and I would add to that, tell me what could happen. Don't just say if something
happens.
You could
die. You could fall out of a window and sell or die.
Give me some scenarios of what actually could happen. It could break. It could, if it gets wet, the screen, you know, whatever it may be.
Right. There could be an electrical storm, a hurricane, some act of God.
I need to picture it happening in my life in order for me to buy that
locusts.
Yeah. They're very common these days.
That's one of the seven plagues. It happened once before.
All right, our final question also comes from Reddit. This username, Barbecue Yak.
Oh, my God.
Barbecue Yak writes, which approach to sales attire do you suggest? Number one, dress professionally, suit and tie, look and feel like a top sales professional, look like somebody your prospect would turn to for advice. Or how about scenario number two, dress like the prospect. People like those similar to them. By dressing the same, they assume you share the same ideals and thus better understand their needs. Or this third scenario, dress like the stereotype of your industry. If he gives the example here, if you sell industrial equipment, dress like an industrial worker. All right, guys, what do you think? What do you subscribe to? Which kind of sales attire would you wear?
Can I answer this one first, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Two words.
Jeffrey got the sports question. She gets the attire question first.
Right, exactly.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Not that we're trying to genderize the show or anything.
Two words. Be yourself. Unless you dress crappy. But be yourself. Don't worry about dressing like someone else because you think they're going to relate to you more. That's bullshit. Dress in an attire that's going to make you feel confident, and ready to make the sale. And make sure you're approachable and make sure you look presentable. Other than that, don't wear, you know, cut up jeans or something like that that's going to look inappropriate to a sales call, but be yourself.
The best thing you can do is think about the fact that what you wear means nothing if you don't have a value message, and vice versa. So if you have a value message, literally you could go naked.
I love how this person says, though, something like, by dressing the same, they assume you share the same ideals. No, they don't. If someone is dressed like me, I don't think we share the same ideals. Exactly. I have to hear what they're going to say. Like, yeah, seriously?
I can't wait to...
They might have good taste in clothing if they're dressed like me.
Oh. Well, I'm just going to say this. I think that whatever you wear, I think that there is a responsibility to represent your company well. I think there's a responsibility to represent your product well. And I think there's even a bigger responsibility to represent yourself well. You have to look at this from the perspective of, I want to make certain that my customer feels comfortable with me. I don't have to look like them, but I have to have something of value to say and not be a distraction. You know, I don't want you to have a mohawk haircut with 5 body piercings or a bunch of tattoos that are, you know, you have to look societal. You have to look like somebody who belongs, not somebody who's an outcast. And then you don't become a distraction to the customer. They'll concentrate on what you say, not what you look like.
Agreed. I get this question, just so you know, a lot from females about how, like, sexy or not they should dress.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because they're like, how low can my shirt really be?
Lower. Just as far as I'm normal. Concerned, who cares? Make it lower.
No, be appropriate.
Oh, anyway, yeah, appropriate.
These are really great questions, everyone.
I'm just going to say this. Men have a much lower level of appropriateness than women do. Oh, golly.
It depends on the woman.
Yeah.
So you can send your question to sellordie@gittimer.com. We've got branding expert Julie Broad coming up in a bit. But first, here's a word from Jeffrey on how to start your thinking differently about your brand.
When somebody sees your brand or your ad, what do you want them to think? And what are they thinking now? When somebody talks about your brand, what do you want them to say? And what are they saying now? When someone sees your ad or your product, what do you want them to do? And what are they doing now? With all the branding hoopla and information in the marketplace, you would think that it would be difficult to make a statement or claim that hasn't been said or done or made before, and you would be wrong. If you're looking to brand, get known, build a reputation, and make sales, you have to study your local market, look at the global market for other ideas, listen to the voices of your present customers, study creativity, build a customer-focused message, and back it with quality and deeds. Dedicate your people to friendly service. Create the atmosphere where people want to and are able to buy. Light the fire. Get the branding iron hot. Burn your brand in the mind, on the mind and the wallet of your customer. But be prepared to sell when they get there, or be prepared to lose to someone who is. Branding is not just about becoming known and shouting your name. You have to back it up with elements of quality, consistency, customer focus, customer help, response, service, and customer attraction. Then throw in a dose of fun so that the customer actually buys because they want to buy. Here's a bonus. If you're able to brand and sell, your competition will hate your guts. What could be cooler than that?
You can find more from that clip and tons more information on branding at the Gittimer Learning Academy. For more information, visit GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for your free demo to start learning and earning. Now, our guest this week is Julie Broad. She is an Amazon number one best-selling author and international book award winner, recipient of the Top 20 Under 40 Award for Vancouver Island in 2014, a successful entrepreneur, recognized real estate investor, and a popular speaker and workshop trainer. Known for helping real estate investors and new entrepreneurs who aren't naturally born to sell, build a brand to get results, make an impact, and ultimately make more money. Julie, welcome to Sell or Die.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, Julie, it's our darn pleasure. You're coming to us all the way from Canada, right? 500 million miles away?
Feels like that sometimes, but yes, that's true.
And, you know, I was just in Victoria. It's like Canada, only farther away.
Well, I'm actually only an hour north of Victoria. I am on the same island.
Oh, really? You're on the same? Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, you're on did they call it Vancouver Island or they call it Victoria? There's Victoria City in Vancouver.
They call it. Exactly. It's Victoria is on Vancouver Island, and there's actually four other cities that are on Vancouver Island.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, a geography lesson before we learn to sell or die. I like that.
I love it. So, Julie, you're here to talk about branding. You have this wonderful book, The New Brand You. But before we talk about that, let's get to know you. When did you get started in sales?
When I graduated from university with my undergrad, it was the best paying job offer. It wasn't the thing I sought out. But of the jobs that I had available to me at the time, it was the best offer job that I had. So, and it came with a company car, which, you know, was pretty fantastic when you're 22. So I took that job. That's how I got into sales. And it was working for a consumer packaged goods company selling Huggies and Kleenex and Kotex. And so it wasn't a cold calling type sales job because they had brands that the stores wanted to carry, you know, the number one or number two brand in every category. But it was still very much a sales job, you know, going store to store and trying to convince people to give you more shelf space, to give you display space, you know, to carry your new products. And that was my start.
And so what did you learn during that?
Well, at first I learned that I was not born to sell. I'm a very high introvert. I'm one of those people who sits at the back of the room and kind of takes it all in. I'm not a natural networker or somebody who just likes to put myself in the middle of things. So it was really challenging to go out to each store and meet new people every single day. And I learned from that, you know, for me, it wasn't the traditional sales training that they put us through wasn't going to work for me. I really had to find a different approach. And for me, what worked, circling the stores, trying to screw up the courage to talk to somebody, that didn't work. So what I eventually did was I started to get to know the people that I had to call on and that I needed to work with. And I would figure out what I could do to help them look good to their boss. And I figured out, you know, kind of the challenges they had every day and where I might be able to make their life easier. And so I stopped thinking about how am I going to get this sale? And I started thinking about how am I going to help this person in front of me? And maybe it's not an instant process, but over time, I started winning sales contests and I was fast-tracked in that job to become, to go to management because of how successful that process of building the relationship and helping people really became.
Did you get into management or were you lucky enough to quit before you got there?
I quit and went and did my MBA.
Perfect.
That's funny. So you mentioned you're an introvert. When did you discover you were an introvert?
I've always been an introvert since I was a little kid, but you don't always realize the impact it has and where it is a challenge and where it's an asset. I think until you're an adult and you're out there trying to make a living, because as a kid, I was always quite happy writing, you know, sitting in my room writing and, you know, talking to myself and all those kind of things. And I was completely content with that. But as an adult and you're out there again, where you know, networking is so important, it doesn't matter what job you're in or what business you're running. networking's critical, and that's where you really feel it. You know, that's where you see, okay, that person's an extrovert. They've met everybody and they know everybody, and you can see the introvert sitting on the sidelines, kind of, you know, thinking about, I might say hello to that one person over there.
So what do you recommend our listeners who are introverts do in, you know, when they're selling and when they're networking?
Yeah, absolutely. There's kind of two big things. So the first is to recognize that it takes a lot of energy as an introvert. You know, it's not that I love people. Like, people are fantastic. But it takes a lot of energy to network. So I'm strategic about it. When I'm going to an event or when I know I really need to meet and connect with somebody, I try to plan it out in advance. So if I know somebody who can introduce us, then I will ask that person in advance to make sure that I connect with that person. I'll look at the list. You know, if I'm going to a meetup group, I'll look to see who's attending and figure out in advance who I really want to connect with. And I'll even think about what I might talk to them about, like who we might know in common, where we might have, you know, maybe we've both gone to school in the same place or from the same area or done something similar. You know, I look at all those things, do some research in advance so that I can really aim to connect with 3 to 5 people and do it well. Versus I'm going for quality, not quantity. So that's kind of the first thing, is to know that it's going to take a lot of energy to do this. So plan in advance. The second thing is, and this is really where I got into branding, because when we became real estate investors, and I say we because my husband was my business partner on all of our real estate investments. When I quit my job and we wanted to grow our portfolio, we had to raise a lot of money to do that. And of course, you know, my timing was brilliant at this. I decided to quit my job in 2008. And if you guys were familiar with the real estate market in 2008, it was rough.
Oh, that happened in Canada too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the banks tightened their lending rules. And of course, I mean, really, the saying in Canada is if the U.S. catches a cold, you know, if the U.S. is sneezing, Canada catches a cold, that kind of thing. So whatever's happening down there always impacts our consumer confidence and everything here. But the lenders tightened the mortgage rules up here. You know, the Lehman Brothers collapse, you know, that was huge all over the world. So there was a big impact. And so we were raising money to buy real estate in that environment where everybody was terrified of real estate. And so what I found, because it was very hard to go out and convince people to give us money, I found that building a brand and becoming a name that people trusted and recognized for that expertise, people actually started to contact us saying, hey, listen, you know, I've got $100,000. I don't know what to do with it. I hear you invest in real estate. Can you help me? And that was a beautiful position to be in. And then as you're networking, people, you know, if you have a good brand, people come up to you and they talk to you, they ask questions, and they even offer to do business with you. So it takes a lot of that awkward uncomfortableness out of it. And a lot of the hard work is done for you because people know who you are and they want to connect with you.
So let me get this straight. Just, you can correct me if we're not on the same path. You put yourself out there as a brand. People see your value or that you are valuable. And they get over your bashfulness by having them call you.
Exactly. It's because they're calling me asking questions. That whole, how am I going to connect? How am I going to get over, you know, screw up the courage to go talk to that person? That's gone because they've done that work for me. And they're also coming to me saying, hey, I think you can help me. They've done half the sales process for me because they've heard about me. They've done a little research or they came across my website or somebody told them about me. It's a fantastically powerful way to attract business.
So without bashfulness, for me personally, I'm not a bashful person. That's been my marketing strategy for the last 25 years.
You're not bashful, Jeffrey?
No, I would call myself an A-type. But I think that, you know, my marketing philosophy, which is found in no book, is I put myself in front of people that can say yes to me, and I deliver value first. And value first is the strategy. Value first is the way. And you did it in Canada. Obviously, we exported it, but you did it. you did it in your work environment, and it paid, and it's still paying. Correct?
Exactly.
I mean, you didn't write a book because you were an introvert. You wrote a book because you were an expert.
Yeah, Exactly. And it's just got a few techniques to help the introverts in it.
Oh, cool. So what do you tell them to do in a bar?
Well, I don't really go to bars.
Don't tell all your secrets, Julie. But I would just say this. Your brand is at the bar all the time. And it's elbow to elbow with all the other brands that are out there of the same thing. And you just look at it in Canada, most especially, look at it as a brand of beer. When you go to a bar, what brand of beer do you buy? And they're all vying for first place, correct? Whether it's Molson's or, you know, a Canadian beer, or Genesee brewed on the border, or St. Pauli's Girl brewed 5,000 miles away. Everybody's looking to that one brand. How do you recommend that people differentiate themselves?
Well, those are all corporate brands. So when it comes to your personal brand, I mean, be yourself. And, you know, I heard you talking before, you know, mohawks and tattoos. Well, in some environments, depending on who your client is, that might be something that it works for you. For a lot of us in the more corporate markets, mohawks and tattoos will make you stand out, but probably not have the message that you want. But I think a lot of people... I think a lot of people out there, especially, you know, I did an MBA, and we're taught to become these perfectly good corporate drones, really. And so you end up, and they even tell you in MBA, if you have your first interview with this type of a company, wear a blue suit, and on your second interview, wear a brown suit. So you're not going to stand out. I mean, there's an element of, yes, now you're fitting in and you're going to be exactly what they're expecting. But for a business person and a professional, if you want to stand out, be yourself. Bring that unique flair that you have in your personality to what you do. So if you love kind of a 60s style, put something on your outfit that shows that 60s style. It's not about being that crazy person that everybody's kind of, like you said in that video, about being distracting, but being memorable and being unique and bringing your personality into it, because you are your brand.
But some people out there are listening right now and they're saying, I'm just a salesman. Why do I need a brand?
Just?
We'll get to that later.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, just a salesman.
My statement is, everyone
needs a brand.
Yeah, of course they do. But why would you tell them that they need a brand?
Why would I tell? Well, because at the end of the day, why are they buying from you versus the other salesman?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're calling yourself just a salesman, what makes you the person they need to buy from? Because there's a whole bunch of other salesmen.
If you're just a salesman, you go home at night, drink a beer, and watch a hockey game, correct? But if you're... I think
other people do that too.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is they have to invest time in themselves to build that brand. You don't just build a brand, right? Don't you have to work at it?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to get clear on the message that you have. You know, if you don't have a clear and consistent message and you're not clear on who you're a fit to help, because, you know, I always use this example. I kind of pick on my dad. He's a bald man. Not picking on bald men, Jeffrey, but he's bald, and yet he's completely happy, right? So if you're selling hair regrowth solution, you might find my dad will be happy to talk to you about this solution, but he's not a buyer. He's not a real fit for what you have to offer, because he's been married 45 years. He's retired. All he cares about is making sure his head doesn't burn. And I think a lot of people will see somebody with a problem and they think, I've got a solution. I'm going to sell this person my solution. But they haven't actually thought about all the details that make somebody a perfect fit for the problem that they have to solve. So you want to get clear on your message, but you also want to get clear on that person who's the ideal fit for the solution that you have to offer, and make sure that that's the person that's in front of you.
And what are some ideas that you can give to people about how to brand themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it depends a little bit on what you're comfortable with, because I could tell you, you know, be on all of these social media and, you know, do video and do all these things, but that's not for everybody. So find, you know, once you're clear on your message, find a good medium that where your market is, but that you're comfortable with. So if you really hate video, podcast is a great option. If the thought of writing pains you, you know, that's where video and podcasting can be an option. But ultimately, you need to get yourself in front of other people's audiences and with that value message that you have to offer. So that's the big thing. Get clear on that message and really figure out the mediums that you can get on. And there's so many choices now, and there's so many choices that you can do it for a low cost. You don't have to spend a fortune on advertising, which used to be the main way you could do it in the past. But, you know, kind of pick the ones that match your market and that fit with you and what you're comfortable with.
So tell us about your brand. How did you put it together?
Well, my first brand was really focused on real estate because that's where the bulk of our business was. And that one I really developed through kind of two things. One was looking at the market and basically figuring out what I didn't want to be. And in the real estate space, there was a lot of people hyping up real estate. You know, they were talking about all the money that you could make and how to make all this money. And while, you know, I certainly had made money and there was some truth to what was being said, I also felt like there was not enough people talking about the reality. And so that was really my brand, was kind of the real truth behind what was happening in the real estate market. So it was looking at what other people were doing and figuring out, okay, where am I a little different? Like, what's that piece that I don't really agree with that's kind of the common stated fact, if you will? So that was kind of the first part. And then again, it was bringing in my own personality to it and really sharing my thoughts, my opinions, and putting that message out there. And so it developed over time. I don't think it's something you wake up and you go, okay, this is exactly my brand tomorrow. But you want to look at the market, and then you also want to figure out where you fit in and develop it from there.
Isn't there also a social aspect to it now? Don't you have to have a LinkedIn and a Twitter and a Facebook and a YouTube channel?
And a Snapchat.
Some people could argue that. Yeah, oh gosh, don't even get me started on that. I don't understand that. I think ultimately you have to be found on Google. But, you know, I think personally, I think Twitter's dying. But but that's me. But I think if you're found on Google.
I love the chapter in your book, You Are Who Google Says You Are.
Yeah, thank you. And that's kind of the point. Like, I think you do need to be online. But you don't need to be on every channel and every spot. You know, pick a couple spots, but ultimately make sure that what's showing up when somebody Googles your name is a match with your brand. It's what you want to be shown out there, and that you can also be found, because it's shocking how many business people can't be found when they Google their name.
Julie, is there such a thing as being too aggressive with your brand? I mean, is there such a thing as branding yourself too much?
I don't know if that's the case, but I can see it where people aren't doing it well. And again, coming back from the real estate space, I find that some realtors will be just so in your face. You know, every posting that they'll have and everything they have is all about their listings, and they're not really adding value and they're not really trying to connect. And I think that's a big thing, is your brand needs to connect with the people that you want to work with and the people that you're most suited to help. And so if you're just preaching to people, you're just talking at them and you're not connecting, then I think that's a branding mistake. I don't think you can be, I don't think it's a bad thing if people say, I see you everywhere. That's a great thing. So it's not over branding, but I think it's doing the wrong things too often can be a problem.
I completely agree with that, by the way. I mean, you can say all you want about a brand and their overexposure. It's a bunch of crap. Look at Geico. Look at Capital One. They brand themselves to death, and they're winning as a result of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love it when somebody says you're everywhere. You know, that's
of course.
A good thing.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what you're saying is, you know, with the list, if they're in real estate and they're just posting listings all day, why would I keep following them? I'd unfollow them. That's annoying. Like, give me some value. Tell me what's going on in the neighborhood. What's new? What, you know, what restaurants have just opened? What's happening? What
free
events are
happening? There's obviously a way to brand, Jen. There's a way to do it. But the key to the message is consistency and being in front or top of mind when someone's looking to buy. If in real estate, people only buy a house maybe every 5 years or so, you got to hit them when the time is right.
Yeah.
So you really do want to be everywhere because you don't know when it's going to be. Yeah, exactly.
Say it again, Jen.
And what Julie was saying is you got to hit them with value.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I totally agree. All right. So if I wanted to find you, Julie, where would I find you? Your website is havemoreinfluence.com, correct?
Correct.
And so yep, I guess...
That's a great place. Mm-hmm.
So I guess, how do you have more influence in business and in life? How do you? What's your influential secret?
Well, I wish there was just one secret, because that would give me a lot less work. But really, I think it comes down to adding value and knowing who you're fit to help. But there's a lot of pieces to it, right? It comes down to being a good communicator. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting better at writing and speaking and all of those kind of things. There's a lot to it. It's a big subject, as you know. But I think that ultimately you have to take action. You know, that's really the mantra that I have in life is the missing piece is always action. So you have to get out there. You have to do things and take that next step to build the business and create the life that you want to live.
Well, I totally agree with that. I want to make sure that you have people that want to build their brand that can find you. So I'm going to tell the audience again that you are your website is havemoreinfluence.com. And this is Julie Broad that we're talking to. Jen, you want to say bye?
Oh, so soon?
Oh, my God.
Julie, I have a burning question, and then I will say goodbye. People always want to know, should I brand my name or my company name? Oh. Should I brand JenniferGluckow.com or should it be my company, Sales in a New York Minute? What do you recommend to people?
Well, that's a really good question. It's kind of complicated. But personally, I think the simplest way I can answer this is to say that it's better to be your brand your name, because then it doesn't matter if you're in a career and you leave that job. It doesn't matter if you start a business and then, like I did, you know, start to evolve away from real estate into something else. If you are the brand name that people know, you can pretty much write your ticket and decide what you want to do. If it's your company name, it's going to be a lot trickier to do that on a personal level, to say, okay, now I'm going to be doing this because you don't have the brand value.
Yeah, I want to brand my name. My first marketing consultant guy, advertising guy, said you have to have your name in your company name if you're not Xerox. So I did. By Gittimer, my name is my brand.
Cool. Well, Julie, thank you for all of your great advice. And thank you for joining us tonight. Your book is The New Brand You. She's Julie Broad. Her website is havemoreinfluence.com. Julie, thank you so much for being our guest on Sell or Die.
Thank you for having me. It was great to be
here. It's our darn pleasure, Julie. Okay, so Jenny, what do you think there?
She's awesome. I really like her book. I'm telling you, she has some real good advice.
Yeah, it's very hard to be specific when you are in... talking generally about branding. But for me, I brand Jeffrey. And obviously my expertise is in sales, but I brand my name. I think that's the most important thing you can do. And the sales guy who's out there right now who says, well, I have to update my resume. No, dude, you have to update your brand. Because the person who's looking at you to hire you, they're going to Google you. They don't give a crap about your resume.
When I'm hiring, I Google every single person.
Of course you do.
Before I have an interview with them.
Of course you do. And you know what's interesting? They don't even Google themselves.
Well, that's the thing. To our listeners, you need to Google yourself. Go home right now.
Not right now. Wait till the show's over.
Right now. You can multitask. Google yourself. What comes up on the first page of Google?
And if it ain't you, something's wrong. Well, I don't want you to be number one. I want you to be the whole damn first page and the whole damn second page, period.
Exactly. And it better be good stuff.
Yeah, like Death Wish Coffee.
Oh.
Death Wish Coffee is our sponsor. It is the world's strongest coffee on the planet, speaking of awesome brands. We are fans of Death Wish Coffee. I'm holding up their mug right now just in case we're videoing this and showing it. Death Wish Coffee is the best coffee made from the strongest possible combination of perfectly roasted beans in a secret formula. It's quite wild.
100%. No bullshit. Money back guarantee. We drink it in the studio when we do the show. We drink it every single day.
I'm drinking it right now.
Oh, yeah, me too. Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com. All right, Jeffrey, here's a question.
Okay.
We obviously love the Death Wish brand.
Yes.
But are there any other examples of branding you've seen lately and thought, yeah, they're doing it right. They're doing it intelligently. They're being thoughtful. And they're just killing the branding game.
Well, there are original brands and then there are Me Too brands. So, for example, I think Amazon pretty much kills it, don't you? They have a great brand. They put themselves out there. They're, you know, and then you have the new brand.
Hold on. You know, with Amazon, they're very thoughtful and intentional with their name. You know, with the little arrow from A to Z, got it all. Like, that is so freaking cool. The day I realized what that was, I was like, oh, my God.
You know, half the boxes on UPS now and FedEx are Amazon boxes.
Yeah.
Half.
Yeah.
So look at it from that perspective. And now let's look at, you know, they have a brand new competitor, Jet, I think their name is.
Yep.
And have you ever seen one of their boxes?
I've never ordered anything from Jet. So no.
Yeah, they're going to die. You can't come in as a Me Too. It's like people that own Surface. What are they thinking?
I don't know.
Jet has
a lot of money. So let's see what happens. Are there any other brands you think are just really killing it?
Yeah, Tesla.
Well, what about some personal brands? I mean, you guys know a lot of people not a lot of salespeople that are branding themselves. I mean, what kind of personal brands have you seen that really stick out and go, okay, yeah, that guy or that gal, they're doing it right?
Well, look at who's in the sales industry right now. There are some people that are trying to brand up. They're putting their stuff out there the best they possibly can. But a lot of them don't really have the depth of experience that's necessary, nor have they been doing it for a long time. I feel like, and I don't, please don't take this as a brag. I'm just talking about what is. I've been doing personal branding with or without the internet literally since 1992. And then the internet came along and I picked up on it right away. And I think that you have to keep up with the branding times. You can't take a full page ad in the newspaper anymore and have it mean anything. What you have to do is make sure that you have a full blown ad campaign on Facebook or on Google and be able to pop up on other people's searches. You know, there's that. There are ways that you can pop up on your competitor's page. Isn't that cool? Things that you could never do in branding or advertising 10 years ago. This was just impossible. So my feeling about it is that if you brand with the times, you have a shot at being found and found easily.
Okay, so let me tell you someone, because Doug, you asked if there's someone as a great personal brand. There is this guy, Jeffrey and I both know him in New York City. His name is Alex Magoob. Alex, and then the last name is Mahgoub. He has a website, alexmagoob.com. He is a real estate agent. And most people have no idea what company he works for because all they know is Alex is the guy. It doesn't matter that he works for Corcoran. He could work for any company under the planet. You do not need to go to Corcoran to find his listings. You go to alexmagoob.com, you get his listings. You go to his Instagram, he is posting the coolest pictures from all over New York City. You go to his Facebook, the same thing. He has client testimonials. He has created a very strong personal brand that I've just been very impressed with.
I think you also have to look at individual males and females in the marketplace. I look at Jen's brand as really beginning to blossom, sales in a New York Minute. I look at Sally Hogshead's brand, who has branded herself phenomenally through the word fascinate. And you can go to her website and find it either at Sally Hogshead or Fascinate. And she actually was an advertising person, so she gets what branding is. She's someone that I admire with respect to what she has done and how she's kept up with the times.
Can I give one example? I've got a small example, a local example.
Sure.
Yeah.
So there's a realtor here in Charlotte. And for those that are not familiar with the city of Charlotte, we don't call our main city area downtown. We call it Uptown.
Yeah.
And there's a realtor here in Charlotte named Mr. Uptown. And it's, to me, it's such a great brand, and you see it all over Uptown. But just the fact that he's Mr. Uptown, it's like, if I want to live in Uptown Charlotte, I'm going to call Mr. Uptown. It gives,
I
it
love
lends,
that.
It lends him legitimacy. It lends him authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you have no idea who this guy is, you go, well, I mean, he's Mr. Uptown. He's got to know Uptown.
That's true. People that have those kind of trade names, in New York City for a decade, it was Crazy Eddie. Our prices are insane. And then it turns out that he didn't pay taxes for 10 years. And so now he's incarcerated, Eddie. But the bottom line there was that everybody knew his name. Everybody knew Crazy Eddie's. And,
yeah,
you know, he put himself out there in the best medium on the planet at the time, which was television. Now the best medium on the planet, to me, is the internet and something having to do with Facebook or LinkedIn or Google or Twitter or, you know, wherever you are, there's somebody's online. It's less expensive, and it doesn't have a geographic boundary. Anybody can tune in from anywhere and find you.
All right. I'm going to switch gears. We have a new segment for you this week.
Oh, is it for me? It's for the audience.
It's for the audience. I'm switching gears for the audience.
See,
and
I always think
you,
everything's
Jeffrey.
About me. Right. I'm a me kind of guy.
Yeah. So have you ever been at a job and thought, I wonder if this is really the place I'm supposed to be? I think you have. I think we've all been there. I think a lot of salespeople have. This segment is for you. It's called Stay or Resume. Our producer, Doug, is going to read real stories from real salespeople and job situations that may be less than ideal. And Jeffrey and I will determine whether they should stay in their position and go make a sale, or if they should dust off the resume and start looking for greener pastures.
Or dust off their personal brand because they don't even have one.
Doug, who's first?
Should we do like one of those Jim Cramer type of, you know, this is not professional advice. Don't quit your job.
Because... Exactly. Yeah, and become a day trader.
Right. Oh, yeah. Total disclaimer.
You know, I like Jim Cramer because he's from Philly. But he also has a definite style that has kept him on TV for a decade. He had another partner at one point in time. He edged the other partner, squeaked the other partner out, squeezed the other partner out, and now it's like the Jim Cramer show.
It's amazing. All right, here's our first stay or resume. Here's a situation I'm in, says Atlas 84. I currently work for a fantastic company. I make $50,000 plus base. Great health benefits, 401k match, the works. But my territory is about half the size of the other reps on my team based on records in our CRM. My territory has some geographic restraints, so adding more accounts is not feasible. Trust me, I've tried. I'm doing well in the eyes of my management and could probably stay in my position forever, but I do not have the six-figure potential that the other reps on my team do based on my territory. Essentially, my income is not where I want it to be, and I don't believe my territory would support my personal goals. So, guys, should Atlas stay or resume?
Jenny, you want to start? Oh, wait, Charlie, do you want to start?
This is a tough one. I don't know if Atlas 84 has asked their boss if they could change territories. I don't know what they've proven in their current territory. You know, if it's really never going to change and those reps have been there forever and they don't think they're going to increase it and there's no potential, well, then I think you have your answer. But if there's a possibility that, you know, maybe someone's going to leave and they can give them an extra territory or a different territory that might be better, then they should stay. And I'm going to challenge Atlas. Are they using the territory as an excuse? Is it a real issue or are they blaming the territory?
I think that the Atlas guy has a valid point and he has to go and confront his boss as to what the future of his career is. And I think that he should go find another job, have the job sort of as a backdoor go to his boss and say, listen, either I got to go or you got to double my territory. And if the boss says, I can't double your territory, he says, I got to go, and he goes.
Hey, you can already see Jeffrey, he's already cheating on this game. He's saying to both dust off the resume and try to stay. That's cheating. You got to pick one or the other.
Go.
All right, resume. All right, next up is Megan. Megan says, I've been in financial advisory and sales for 16 years and have always been successful. About 6 months ago, I was headhunted by a firm to come work for them. During the interview process, which was 2 months long, I made it very clear that I do not own a book of business, as I had always worked for firms that provided that book to start with, and I built from there. My sales manager made it clear after I asked several times that leads were provided and that I did not need a book. Okay, flash forward 4 months later into this job, and I've been giving a whopping 3 leads. 2 were folks looking for pink unicorns, and the other I closed in 10 minutes. Megan sounds like a character. I like Megan.
Oh, yeah.
All other sales came from friends and family. I met with my sales manager to discuss my concerns, as I'm becoming insecure about being able to pay my bills, and was told that there was no help he could give. Ooh. I just need to find a group of people with an affinity to my interest, and then I'll be fine. I have been cold calling my target leads for weeks, averaging about 2,000 calls a week. Do you know where that has got me? Nowhere. Should Megan stay or resume?
Seriously, Megan? Get the hell out of there.
Resume!
Yeah, first of all, the guy lied to you about leads. If your boss lied to you about leads, he's going to lie to you about income. He's going to lie to you about security. He's going to lie to you about everything. And you're going to be the first to go. Go get another job right now.
Is that a cardinal?
WTF, resume.
Is that a cardinal sin for sales managers, lying about leads?
Oh.
Sales managers lie. And if yours is a liar, leave.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, the last one here, Go Robots Go. That's the username from reddit.com/r/sales. I have an engineering background, and I'm currently working for a company that sells engineered products. I spent most of my career in the programming technical side of this, and now I've moved into sales about 2 years ago. I've been given a little over $1 million in existing accounts, but they are taking up a lot of my time. I think part of the reason is that I used to be their technical contact, and they think they can use me as a good resource. This is good for my relationship with them, but it ends up taking a lot of my time away that I need to be spending on getting new accounts. This is important since I'm primarily paid on new account revenue and new account wins. I think in other companies, there's a better separation between new business development and account maintenance. Part of me also has the idea that in other industries, there might be more separation between these roles. I have it in my mind that there are also other industries where you can make decent money and not have this type of ongoing maintenance. So obviously, Go Robots Go has some issues with this company. Should Go Robots Go stay or resume?
I'm going to tell you why he should resume. This guy doesn't love what he does. There's no passion behind anything that he said. And all he wants to do is go someplace where he has to do less work and make more money. So my recommendation would be either start your own business or write down a list of the 10 things that you totally love and pick one of those and go do that.
Yeah.
Jen said.
Yeah, Jen, you agree.
Resume.
So far we haven't had a stayer.
The first one was a maybe stay.
I like this thing, Doug.
This is fun.
This is a keeper. This segment's a keeper. All right.
Totally keeper.
Still ahead. Get out your agenda. We've got one more thing to squeeze into your schedule. But first, here's another word from Jeffrey, straight from the Gittimer Learning Academy.
If you're going to apply for a new job, you probably think you need to update your resume. Are you kidding me? I mean, are you serious? Resume? Like, dude, the days of having a resume are over. Social media, personal brand, and reputation have taken over forever. If you come to me looking for a job, I don't care about your resume, and I don't even care about your references. Do you honestly think I'm going to call your high school track coach or your college professor who thinks you're a great guy? No. I'll just look you up on Google. I'm going to see if you have a Twitter account. I want to see how many connections you have on LinkedIn. I'm going to look for your blog and your website. Got a YouTube channel? No, it's time to build your brand. The time to build your brand is while you're working, so that if you do lose your job or even decide to change jobs, your personal brand will land you a better job.
So this has been like an amazing show, and I can't think of any better way to end it than with two more things that can help you make more sales. It's time for our weekly sales agenda. Each week we share one thing that we actually want you to do to make time for in your schedule. Put it down in your calendar, make an appointment with yourself, set a couple of alarms on your iPhone, and if you don't have one, make an appointment to go buy one. And at least they don't blow up in airplanes. And Jen, what do you have?
Well, last week I talked about adding personal development to your agenda. And this week I want to take it a step further and go a little bit deeper, because hopefully you added it to your agenda last week.
Mm-hmm.
And this week I want to stress the importance of practice and repetition. So whatever you added to your calendar last week, let's say you signed up for the Gittimer Learning Academy.
Let's say that.
And let's just say that, right? And you decided to invest time in yourself and invest money in yourself and your personal growth. Well, you can't just watch it once. So I want you to make time to repeat and practice what you're learning, whatever it may be, whether it's guitar or tennis or how to better your sales.
Or even how to shampoo your hair. In fact, those instructions are on the shampoo bottle. Lather, rinse, repeat.
Exactly.
Jeffrey, what's your idea? Oh, were you done? Am I stuck?
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your idea is.
My idea, let's talk about our show today. I want you to pick one thing that you can do that will actually build your personal brand, whether it's establishing a better profile on LinkedIn or starting your own YouTube channel that has a couple of testimonials on it or some instructional value messages for your customer. Do one thing for 10 minutes a day that will add to your personal brand. And at the end of a week, you've at 10 minutes a day, you now have 50 minutes. But at the end of 10 weeks, you now have 500 minutes. Do that, and your personal brand will blossom, not grow, blossom by the end of the year. That's what I got to say, Jenny.
I like it. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for listening to the Sell or Die podcast. We're back next week. From Paris, actually, with more helpful sales strategies that you can turn into money.
We are going overseas, and we're going to see you when we get there, not when we get back. We're going to be
in
gay Paris.
That's right, because we are committed to you, our listeners. Subscribe on iTunes by searching Sell or Die. And come join the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
And thank you to our guest, Julie Broad. Our producer is Doug Branson. Our technical director is Chris Hill. And without them, we would be jack shit. But until next time.
I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.